I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon Film Podcast. This week we'll be discussing Javier Beauvoir's World War I drama The Guardians, a film about the women of a family who are left behind to work and survive on their family farm when the men of the family have left to go to war. I'm Sam Howlett, and left behind to tend to the podcast with me this week are Amy Watts
and, hello.
And Stephen Ryder.
Hello.
How are you guys doing?
Very good, thank you.
Tired.
Yeah.
Tired. Why?
You've been farming all day.
So, written and directed by Javier Beauvoir, based on a novel by Ernest Perrichon. The film is set between 1915 and 1920 at Le Paradier Farm, which has changed dramatically since the men of the family have left home to fight on the front line. The mother of the family, Hortense Sandrail, has been left behind with her daughter, Solange, taken over courageously, but finds it hard to get by with all the workload. And when harvest time comes around, she makes up her mind to hire a farmhand. She's too late and no men are available, and so the mayor recommends an orphan named Francine Rion. Hortense agrees, and the choice soon appears a blessing as the girl proves perfect, well-mannered and respectful. She's also a hard worker who does not balk at any task. Now, before we talk about it, I'm going to talk a little bit about World War I in film.
World War I in film?
Mm.
I'm not going to lie, I try and stay clear of war films, but...
Well, this is probably the quietest World War I film ever made. I think there are two battle scenes in the whole film, really.
I wouldn't even call them battle scenes.
They're dreams, aren't they?
Dreams. Yeah. I mean, you did say, obviously, the film opens in 1915, which is in the kind of midst of the trench warfare, I think. We see kind of like 30 seconds of the soldiers, and then that's our kind of link to the war. But
setting the scene.
Yeah, setting the scene. But it's an odd thing to do, because usually in First World War films, it is about trench warfare, right?
Absolutely.
And it is about kind of like hunkering down and getting through things. But with this one, the pressure's coming from like a long, long way away. But these women that are still working on this farm can feel every single like bit of that pressure on them. And I think that's a really fascinating kind of juxtaposition towards the normal World War One film. Is there a reason you don't like war films, Amy?
I just find them quite boring.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's really bad. And that's not to say I hate all war films. And, you know, what I'm saying is I try and stay clear of World War One. World War II, because I don't know, there's been so many.
Mm-hmm. No, it's true.
Like, I like learning about wars I don't know about. Mm-hmm. For example, you know, the Rwandan.
Yeah. But this, to me, feels like a war that we don't know about, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, it feels like a kind of, you know, because let's face it, it's less interesting in a way, like, on the surface level, to look at people who aren't fighting in the war.
I was trying to think of some. Before, I've seen more TV than...
Yeah.
There was a Sarah Waters adaptation. It was in World War II, but similar, you know.
Yeah.
Called The Night Watch. It was great. You should all check that out. And the last of the blonde bombshells with Judi Dench.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, when I was like 13, found it on YouTube recently.
And these are about people back home.
Yeah. I would say that the adaptations I've seen tend to show that women quite find war, in a sense, liberating because they get to do things they haven't done before. They're allowed into the workforce. And then when the men come home, they're sort of relegated back to the... So
but when the men come home is...
Oh, yeah, if and when. Yeah, of course.
Because that's the thing with this film. I think the fact that we spend so long with these women, watching them work so hard and not complain, to be perfectly honest. Like, they do their job because they know they need to do it. And then to watch, at times in the film, to watch somebody have to come and tell them that their husband or their son has died, you can see that, like, all this hard work that they've been putting in, to them all of a sudden feels like nothing.
Yeah.
And that's quite heartbreaking, I think, to watch in a film of this ilk.
Right, let's track through the film a bit then and introduce who the family are. First of all, I just want to add that if you do have any thoughts or review of The Guardians, you can check at Curzon Cinemas on Twitter and reply to the call out, or you can email us podcast@curzon.com and we can read you out on next week's show. So we have Hortense Sandrail, played by Natalie Bay. She is very much the matriarch of the family. And then her two sons, Constant and Georges, have gone to war along with her daughter Solange's husband Clovis. Who was Henri? Was that her?
Henri's her husband.
Her husband.
Yeah.
He has like little to nothing to do in the film, which is why I was like, is he?
No, that's not her husband.
Henri.
The guy that they live with.
Yeah. Well,
no, because they talk about at the beginning.
That's what I thought I heard. Yeah.
The father's dead, and he'd be proud of Constant.
It's the women on the farm that are actually doing the work that are important. Like,
It's a dense film in terms of character, but the information comes at these incremental kind of spots.
It's very
sporadic. There can be these long periods of the film where seemingly nothing is happening, and it's a beautiful kind of landscape shot of people farming.
Yeah.
Very painterly in a lot of places, and then all of a sudden there'll be this kind of inciting incident, and you have to kind of like throw yourself back into the film, and I'm sure that's what it felt like for the characters as well. Like, days and months go by without anything of any importance happening, and then all of a sudden, you know, somebody comes home or revisits, and it kind of throws everything into chaos all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I think that the film does something really well, and that's the passing of time, which some films don't always get right, and sometimes it's not clear exactly how long. Loads of films, I mean, this helps that it tells you the year, but I just think it feels like it's been a year.
Yeah.
Between each time it tells you the year. Mm-hmm. So it's between 1915 and 1920, and I think it tells you when each year passes. And it does feel like a year's passed on the farm.
I think it's because of
the seasons.
That's the one. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You get to see some really beautiful establishing shots every time kind of the seasons change. The cinematographer,
So the cinematographer's name is Caroline Champetier.
She seems to be incredible at capturing like the temperature of a scene.
Yeah.
So if it's like late spring, she seems to be able to grab the sun shining in just the right spot, or like at just the right height and just the right brightness for you to kind of suddenly feel the heat of the scene. And I think that's a really, really smart thing to do in a film like this, because as Sam said, it does tell you the passing of time without being very explicit about it.
She shoots a lot of misty scenes, doesn't she?
Yeah, that was
great. Which kind of reflects the fact that they're in the dark about what's going on other than on the farm. You know, they don't know what's happening to them.
It feels very like hermetic, like a closed-in world.
Yeah.
I can't recall, apart from towards the end, seeing a scene kind of outside of the farm.
Well, there is a scene in the village.
In the village, yeah.
When Francine goes to buy a brooch.
Oh, lovely scene.
Lovely. Yeah.
Yeah, so nice.
Quite a quaint village. I mean, it's, you know, if it was shot in London, you would see, I feel like there would be more.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that's more World War II. I should just, yeah.
I think, can we talk a bit about Iris Bry, the actress who plays Francine, because you just mentioned the brooch scene.
Yeah.
Which I think is one of my favourite scenes in the film, because obviously she's a character that comes from a very poor background. She's an orphan, I think, and she kind of doesn't balk at all at hard work and really pushes herself to help this family as much as she can. And I think the actress, Iris Bry, I think I read somewhere that she was pulled off the streets, kind of by a director and who told her, you've got the exact look I'm looking for, brought her onto the film. And I think she absolutely knocks it out of the park. I think she's really, really fantastic in this, and kind of the beating heart of a film that is quite slow. And I think she really keeps it kind of moving along in a really nice way.
Yeah, the character has made the best of her situation. She finds herself in a lot of unlucky situations, I guess. And, you know, she learnt to read and write, and she's saved money. And she's kind of the only character that remains moral throughout the...
Oh, that's an interesting take. I think maybe that's why they cast this this actor, because she does some amazing kind of... She's obviously a very beautiful actor, but she's also does some amazing things with her face, and especially her mouth. Like, she's trying to hold back a smile a lot of the time. Mm. And I think it really kind of shows you that she doesn't want to be kind of very emotionally naked in front of people, but she's got this... She's got a real tenderness about her, I think. And I think the brooch scene that we were talking about really shows that, how she... When the person in the shop hands it over to her, the way she says thank you to her is like so full of, like, she's not just saying thank you for helping me out today in the shop. She's saying like, thank you for sharing this moment with me. And I think it's really, really sweet. No, I think it's genuinely sweet. I think she wants to remember this time that she finally had enough money to spend on something that was hers.
Well, no, she gave it away, didn't she?
Yeah, but then she could give it to Marguerite, right?
Again, moral.
Yeah, moral, very moral. Yeah, but And I mean, the scene just before that, the guy in the shop says to her, the guy, who is that man, by the way?
Yeah, is that some kind of mirror figure?
Yeah, he's kind of like, she seems like she's his ward.
Yes, like, I think it's something like
don't know, because he kind of, maybe he's the guardian.
He's the guardian.
That's what the film's about him.
He says to her, you have more money now than most kind of bourgeois women.
Yeah, she's got loads of...
Because she's smart and, you know, capable. And the look on her face, again, is one of, like, pride, I guess.
She's also the one that... The character that complains the least and has... She seems to remain the strongest, in a sense. Like, she never... A lot of the other characters have these pained expressions on their face just the whole time. Mm. And she internalises everything, it seems. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because she's not got someone in the war until George.
Yeah. So the men of the family intermittently come home on leave. So Constant comes home first. Then we meet Clovis, who is Solange's husband. And then George comes home. And George and Francine hit it off right away.
They do.
And that's another kind of narrative thread going through the film. This kind of relationship that they share.
I don't know about you guys, but I thought that they had some really great, like, sexual tension between them. I thought that they were like, they worked really, really well together as a couple.
Good chemistry.
Great chemistry. And it felt like in a film like this that I wasn't expecting it to be kind of so palpable.
I thought it would be all that, excuse me. I thought it would be more, I'm talking about this stuff. It just,
yeah.
My throat. I expect it to be more suggested than it is.
For sure. Yeah.
But it's just to be like, because there's a bit where, like, they go to the forest, and I thought, oh, you wouldn't see anything, it would be behind the rock, but it's like when the train goes through a tunnel in a film.
It's far from explicit, but it certainly doesn't shy away from the tension that scene needs, I think. Mm. And the release for both of them that they need there. But I think they worked really well off each other, considering he's quite small in stature, and I think she's quite, she comes across quite grand sometimes. Mm. And I think that despite that, they kind of worked really well as an on-screen couple, and it was really great to see.
And he's giving you a look.
I just find that just the oddest thing to say.
Why?
Just, do you often think about the body types of people when you're...
On screen?
Yeah.
Yeah, for
okay,
sure.
I'm just, maybe I'm more into the emotion of it.
But on screen, like, I think it's difficult to find a couple that go together well. I mean, that's why they do casting sessions with two people a lot of the time.
Yeah, but isn't the whole point the characters themselves rather than what they look like together, no? Because it doesn't matter.
Keep going.
Call Me By Your Name, like, they don't really go well together.
No, but they play off that in Call Me By Your Name, don't they? Like, that's the point of that film. And I think it works well. It's so similar to this, I think. In that
it's their first loves, like their first passions.
It certainly seems to be her the first man that she's
it is.
Ever
she
been
says
with.
It is the first man she's been with and the only man she's loved.
Wow.
And then
we don't know about George though. Oh, we do kind of know about George, Marguerite. We don't know.
They definitely have not.
No.
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 She's
we haven't introduced Marguerite. Yeah. She's Clovis's daughter from a previous marriage, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they're kind of there's. I think Marguerite very much expects that she'll grow up and marry Georges. And I think the whole family kind of do as well. Yeah. Well, Hortense definitely, I think, thinks that.
Yeah. And it probably would have happened if...
Yeah.
But he says that he thinks of her as his little sister.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a heartbreaking scene, that, but I think George handles it quite well. When he tells her,
when he friend zones her,
yeah, when he
sister zones.
I'm sorry, but that was not a great friend zone.
It wasn't.
No, he was like, "You're so beautiful," and then kissed her on the forehead. Make it clearer.
That's a fair point, Amy.
Just saying.
That's a very fair point. but no, I think that she's a really sweet character and one that you feel quite a lot.
Marguerite?
Yeah.
Oh, she found her very annoying.
Really?
Yeah, she looks through Francine's letters.
Yeah, that's sneaky.
And that was heartbreaking when Francine tries to give her the brooch and she just, you know, Francine's an orphan. And
yeah, they're both, their mothers died in childbirth, didn't both
yes,
of them.
Yes.
That's what they share in common.
I liked their relationship up until that point.
I think comparing Marguerite to Francine is
I'm not comparing
because
them.
Marguerite is a troubled kind of person, whereas Francine's kind of perfect in every way. So it's, I don't know.
No, I'm not comparing them. I'm just saying that I liked their friendship before that. And what really annoyed me about the film, actually, while we're here, is the fact that you didn't really see the women, like, chat a lot with each other. I don't know. I thought there'd be more, like, bonding scenes.
I think they were working too hard. Like, I think they were all tired.
Yeah, maybe it's that. Like, when they're in the field and they're having their lunch, they were just quiet, I thought.
That's a beautiful shot, by the way.
I love the way she pans faces.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Incredible. Like, that scene where they're all sitting around eating, and, yeah, I think the camera pans almost twice around, and then it comes back around to the original group, and then they run because one of the sons has come back home. And I think it's all done in one shot, and it's very slow. And it takes its time, but I think it just pays off in the end. I think it's just a lovely kind of moment where everyone's exhausted and they're taking a break, you know, and thinking.
She pans in the church as well during the funeral because it's like they're there again and you can see the struggle and frustration that this war hasn't stopped yet.
Yeah, there's almost kind of an apathy on their faces to the point where they're like, they're dead. Like, you know, that they can't keep going through the same thing every Sunday, hearing who's died in the town that week. And
there
you're right,
there is a distinct lack of joy in this film.
But that's why the moments of joy, I think, are so great. Mm. Like, like we talk about, like the sex scene, like her buying the brooch. I think towards the end, when she goes to get her child christened, is another moment where you see Francine and she looks like there's a weight of the world's off her shoulders. Mm-hmm. And just the moment where she says as well, like, I'm going to have this child and I'm going to raise it and it's going to stick up for me.
Yeah,
I knew you'd like that. Yeah, it was so sweet. And it didn't come for me from a place of, like, pity either.
No, she was quite proud.
Yeah.
And she really defies the norm of gender expectations of that time. There's a lot of sexism in the film. There's expectations for Solange to have children. They keep bringing it up all the time.
They do.
Poor Solange can't have children. And then sexual harassment they have to deal with. Mm. And that actually ends up ruining Francine's situation, shall we say. I don't know if you want to talk about more. The expectation to get married.
And
slut shaming.
And despite the fact that there are never any men around, they're still feeling that kind of...
I know,
they're still policing each other.
Yeah. It's very, very strange in that regard. And I think... that
that's how deep these things are ingrained.
Yeah, no. It's very, I mean, I think the film really nails that, because war is described all the time as like a folly of men, right? Mm. And you do feel that throughout the film that it's these women that are having to kind of shoulder the burden of keeping the world normal,
yeah,
and keeping society, yeah, normal, whilst the men go off and ruin it. So yeah, I think you're right. I think all of those things, and the women policing themselves, is a really interesting like part of the film.
And there was that great scene between Hortense and Solange when she confronts her.
Yeah. Mm.
That's a really great scene.
You know that that's real life mother and daughter.
Really?
I thought that because they look so similar. At one point, I thought the older lady, what's her name? Sorry.
Natalie Bay.
So you've got Natalie Bay.
Natalie Bay. Am I right?
Was actually just the younger actress.
Natalie Bay.
Natalie Bay, sorry.
Guys, I said Natalie Bay.
That's very good.
Natalie Bay.
You thought it was just her with makeup on, and they shot the scene.
Look too similar.
If you actually had a look at it, then...
Unbelievable as mother and daughter because they're too similar looking. Amy writes in her review.
No, I thought that was a good thing.
No, if you look at
Martin Sheen and Charlie Sheen, I don't believe it.
Don't cast them
together. Come on.
Natalie Bay when she was younger looks exactly like Laura Smet does now. It's kind of uncanny.
So who's Natalie? Because I looked at the actors, obviously, but I was like, oh, they don't have the same name,
they're not.
You gave up
there. I gave
up. Case closed.
But no, they are a real life mother and daughter, and I think that scene in particular, if you were to watch that now, knowing that, is really incredible. The way that they play off each other. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Also, I love the way Solange is like, I have desires.
Yeah.
It's great. Let's hear more about that.
But Natalie Bay is kind of like a...
she's a veteran of the screen.
She is a veteran. What did you think to her character, Amy, in terms of... Hortense.
Oh, do you want to talk more about that scene?
Just about that scene. Okay. Do you think she's kind of the antagonist of this film, or do you relate to the things that she does?
No, I don't relate to her.
No.
I think, her prejudice is kind of... sickness in a way. Like I actually think it ends up causing her more pain than doing good. She's very like, oh, I'm doing this for my family, but really she's just doing it for her, I don't know, I guess reputation. But there's that great scene when Hortense catches the eye of Francine when Francine is christening her granddaughter, and you see how shaken Hortense is. She looks in pain for a lot of the film.
She does.
I really... the first half of the film, I admired her greatly. And then when she...
when she exiles Francine.
I mean, do we empathise with her, though, for the fact that she's been left to kind of look after this family? And if she sees any kind of cracks in that dynamic, she feels the need to, like, paper them up immediately.
But she's also causing her son pain.
I agree.
I don't know. I thought she could have been redeemed, but maybe it is more interesting that she goes against the expectation to be good and right.
Yeah, I think because the whole film, she's being the grieving mother, and she has some great scenes as the grieving mother.
She does.
But then also she has to be, you know, the strength of the family, and she does that well. But that's kind of a well-worn thing, isn't it? The other mother trying to keep it together, what's going on. And I think the last sort of 20 minutes of the film shows Hortense to be one of the most like more complex characters in the film.
Yeah.
And the fact that she isn't redeemed, that she has lived the fact that the reason she doesn't see her grandchild, the reason her son isn't with his child, is her fault.
Mm-hmm.
It's all her fault.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you kind of lay out her character arc from beginning to end like this, and
it's
a weird arc, but it's good. Like, it's actually a really good arc. And I think the fact that there is a lack of redemption for her. I mean, the person I watched it with turned to me at the end and said, so she doesn't get to kind of have a reconciliation with her son. And I think that's really odd. It's really brave for a film to do that, I think, but odd. And I think that it kind of puts a full stop on her character. And I thought she, by the end of the film, it painted her as a bit of a villain, but I'm trying to find a kind of way to empathize.
Yeah, I don't know if villain is...
Yeah, villain's a strong
villain's
word.
A strong word, but she's just the one... She's... when you compared it earlier with me to Atonement, didn't you?
Yes, yeah. I was thinking about Atonement in the fact that one instant kind of changes the course of people's... I mean, one misinterpretation changes the course of people's lives.
I would say, though, that I feel like The Guardians does kind of... The final scene does end on a really nice note. It left me, you know, the kind of final shot of her smiling, of Francine smiling, is it's a lovely smile, and it seems very genuine. But it feels like it was done almost that once the director had said cut, which was strange for me. Do you know what I mean?
I reckon someone does something offset.
Yeah, that's what it just felt like. But they decided to keep it in because it was so genuine.
It's a really, really nice ending, actually. Yeah,
it was a massive tone change, but I guess the war's over, so...
That's true. It's true. It was odd for me to see the film kind of jump from 1918 to 1920 so quickly like that after we'd spent, like... The years felt very long in this film, and you could feel the time that these women had spent farming. And then all of a sudden you jump to 1920 and things changed a lot, you know, and she seems to have, you know, gotten over the fact that she had lost the love of her life. And it's in that way it was nice to see, you know, it was a nice ending.
I wanted to quickly get in that the dream that Georges has where he's fighting these, like, gas mask-wearing soldiers. He takes off their gas mask. And it's him.
It's him.
That's Empire Strikes Back. Seriously,
You think it's a homage?
It must be.
Yeah?
It can only be a homage to the Empire Strikes Back.
I mean, George wouldn't have seen Empire Strikes Back in 1917.
Yeah, that's weird. Javier Beauvoir has, though,
He has.
Lampierre.
That must have been your least favourite scene then, Amy.
I liked that scene, actually.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Have you two seen them? Did you two get that?
Yeah.
But I was so like, this is so that dream. This is weird.
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably have dreams in which they
fight
kill themselves.
Yeah,
I think so. I mean, has that happened to you before?
No.
Right,
has it you?
Then.
You do?
I think so.
No, I don't think so.
I think so. I'm quite scared of doppelgangers, though, in general. I think they're the scariest thing. Really? Like, imagine waking up and you look at the end of bed and there's a figure at the end of your bed and you turn the light on and it's you. Like, that's weird, right?
That's less scary, no?
I saw this film at the London Film Festival last year, and I didn't like it very much at the time. I was mentioning to you off mic, Sam, that I think it's because The Guardians isn't a festival film in the sense that you can kind of fit it in around four or five films a day.
Yeah.
It's, you know, lengthy, it's slow, and it can emotionally it can take a lot out of you. But I think in a kind of in a capsule going to the cinema to see this, whether it's a matinee screening or an evening screening or what, I think it works really, really well as like a little time capsule film of a niche set of people that probably don't get enough written or made about them.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't seen many adaptations of portraying World War One in France. I mean, especially on a farm.
Yeah, no, especially on a farm away.
It's
from
a story
the war
that
itself.
Hasn't been told.
Yeah,
and it portrays greatly quiet stoicism that women often have. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if either of you have seen The Gleaners and I, the Agnes Varda film, but she talks it's a fantastic movie, but she talks about a painter, the Gleaners, the painter that painted that is called Millet, and he did a lot of these farming scenes that I'm positive that...
Yeah, there must be referential to this.
Jean-François Millet, like, you can see.
Yes.
It's kind of very much like the magic hour, very much a lot of women working on farmland, and they're very famous throughout France as these kind of iconic pictures, nostalgic pictures of the war. And this film, I think, captures that really, really well. I think Days of Heaven, I don't know if you've seen that,
Days
of Heaven.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think, visually... takes a lot from that film, and that's a beautiful film, and the fact they've managed to replicate that kind of tone in any way whatsoever is fantastic. Yeah, really impressive.
I agree. Really beautiful to look at, this film.
No doubt.
And I think that although it is a somewhat familiar story, I think the characters actually become far more complex and interesting than I thought they would in a film like this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so that's The Guardians, which is out today in cinemas and also on Curzon Home Cinema. But as well as The Guardians, we also have another new film on Curzon Home Cinema, The Eyes of Orson Welles, which is Mark Cousins' documentary where he discovers a secret vault filled with Orson Welles' drawings, and it's all about how Orson Welles literally views the world, and it's a really interesting, really meditative look at Orson Welles as a visual, not just a filmmaker, but just as sort of a master of the visual terrain. Mm-hmm. So that's on home cinema as well. And we also have the Mark Cousins curated collection. So to tie in with this new film, Mark Cousins has created a season of films with the lavish style Orson Welles was renowned for. So the films he's chosen, which he feels fit in with the Orson Welles sort of stylistic aesthetic, are The Warrior, You the Living, The Lives of Others, American Psycho, Le Bonheur, Boy Meets Girl, Donnie Darko, The Babadook, Sexy Beast, and Le Quattro Volte.
What a weird, eclectic mix of
films. But hey, Mark Cousins sees some Orson Welles in each of them.
Is there anywhere where you can read about what he sees in each of them? I would love to know. That's fascinating.
Well, he's written a little blurb. In each case, these films seem to have more style than they need. They go beyond realism or understatement and take us into a wild world. They seem bursting with a love of film, with its operatic potential. They have elements of magic, myth, or the circus. In all of these, they have Welles' exuberant approach, his uncontainable with a way with a camera. Welles' film and these movies dynamize the world. They make it exciting, an adventure, a labyrinth.
That's super interesting. Mm. I mean, I couldn't think of two movies that are more different than The Babadook and Le Quattro Volte.
A great selection of films, all available now on Curzon Home Cinema. So, as ever, do let us know what you thought of The Guardians or any film we've discussed on the podcast, either by emailing podcast@curzon.com or finding us on Twitter at Curzon Cinemas. So that's goodbye from Stephen.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye from Amy.
I was going to do that.
Trevor. And it's goodbye from me. Adieu.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.